Yeah. Are you on?
Yeah.
Okay. So again, it's mostly so today is the brute part. So computations, and we try to reach the goal as quickly as possible. A lot of it, well, I mean, again, I'm allowing myself to be somewhat unmotivated, though I think, it's at least in my mind, it's sufficiently motivated. You'll have to tell me what you think. Anyway, let me remind you where we were. So, first of all, we start from an R matrix, which is simply an element in A tensor A, where A is usually a universal enveloping algebra, or some completion of that of such universal enveloping algebra. And then whenever we have a knot, we just put sort of, we put one copy of R on each strand, and we do it by putting on near each crossing, and we do it by putting the A's on the over strands and the B on the under strands, and if these are negative crossings, we do the same with R inverse. And then we pick a beginning point and start reading along the knot, and we get an expression in the universal enveloping algebra, or more precisely, the universal enveloping algebra completed, and that's our candidate knot invariant. Okay, and we want to compute it. So we want to compute it. First of all, we need a basis for the universal enveloping algebra. And a PBW theorem says that if x1 through xk is a basis of G, then sort of basically monomials in these variables make a basis of the universal enveloping algebra, except these variables don't commute, so you have to choose an ordering. So monomials which occur in order form a basis. And then, so far it's generalities, and today I want to talk about one specifically algebra, though most of what I will say will be completely general. I mean, we'll work in any, the programs will work with any algebras, but I will only use them for this particular algebra. So, the Lie algebra is the Lie algebra generated by HELF, so H, E, L, and F, and under the rules that H is central and the other commutation relations are written over here. Also, the degree of F and H is 1, and the degree of E and L is 0. And you can check that this makes it a graded Lie algebra, so this makes the universal enveloping algebra also graded, which means that it actually makes sense to look at infinite sums and not just finite sums, provided the degrees increase. Okay? And then I claimed, but I don't think I've proven it, that we have a solution of the classical Young-Baxter equation, lowercase r, and it's just h tensor f plus f tensor e. Remember, that's the infinitesimal thing that is sort of you add to the identity and you get an approximate solution of Young-Baxter. And in this particular case, some magic happens. Generally, integrating an infinitesimal thing is not so easy. But in this case, the exponential of lowercase r is uppercase r, is a genuine Young-Baxter solution of Young-Baxter. So this is the r that we can put here. Okay? I haven't proven it. And in fact, I will not prove it today. I will prove it at some point later on. The proof is easy. It's a computation. But I will verify it to some degree today. That's the point. Okay? And finally, you see, we really need to work in powers of the universal enveloping algebra of something. And in general, u of g to the tensor power s is the same as the universal enveloping algebra of s copies of g. This is true for any Lie algebra. And one nice way to write it is to write this as a single Lie algebra
that has generators, well, in our case, it's H-I-E-I-L-I-F-I, so H-I-E-I-L-I-F-I, where the I's run on the indexing set, and the commutation relations are, well, things that belong to different tensor factors commute. So the commutation relations are EI with LJ, so EI with LJ, E with L is E. So EI with LJ will be delta IJ EI. So if they're on the same strand, they commute like here, otherwise they just commute, etc. So I wrote only one relation, but all the rest are written in the same way. So now I want to implement this. Okay? So first of all, there was an embarrassing point last time, which was I was trying to punch in the order relation in PBW basis, and the order relation I used the script lesson, and I didn't know how to type it in, and I decided that this should not happen again. So I figured out where Mathematica saves its initialization files, and it turns out that if you create a file in the directory called base directory slash kernel, and the file is called init.m, so let's just print what this looks like. So so this is, in my computer, it's on c:\programdata\mathematica\kernel\init.m. On your computer, it might be something else. But anyway, if you put something in this file, it gets executed every time you start up Mathematica. What I've put in this file is, if I'm running it for in the presence of a front end, namely if it's not running as a background process, so you can ignore this, then I add an option to the front end that there are a few more input aliases. And I guess all I'm telling you is that you can customize these things. So, in fact, I've done this a long time ago when I needed the Russian je character for some program. So I've put the alias je gives the Russian letter je. But now I've added all the things I was missing in the previous time. So now I don't need to execute this because it's been executed already because it's part of init.m. So I don't need to execute this line, but now I can check it. So if I hit escape, Z-H-E, escape, it will give me the Russian je, and if I hit escape, --, escape, it will give me this curly --, sign. So the embarrassment of last time will not happen again. Well, it will happen in different ways. Anyway, and now I can remind you what the program did. So first of all, I declared that there is a PBW ordering of E, L, and F, and it's E first, L two, second, F third, and H I just don't bother to order. I consider it H as coefficients. And then I've defined the brackets of all of these things. They're defined right here. And you can compare it with, we talked about it already, okay? And then, so I'm only reminding you what's going on here. So, you know, we can test it. So, the bracket of a U word, universal enveloping algebra word, containing only E, with a U word containing only F, that should be, I think, some multiple of L, either plus L or minus L. And, oh, I forgot to execute this. Execute, and now, H, sorry, it's not L, it's H. So you get H as a coefficient and the empty word, because nothing remains of the word. Okay. Then I've defined, basically I've extended it to the sub-I situation. So I've defined it already last time. So I talked about it already last time, so I don't see a strong need to repeat it. But
we can test it. So I don't know, let me copy paste this and sorry, first of all let me execute that. Then I've already copied, so I just need to paste. And now let me add here control underscore sub 1 and control underscore sub 2 should be 0 because they are on different tensor factors. Well, we got 0. Let me copy paste it again, but now change the 1 to 2. So now it's happening on strand number 2, so I should be getting H number 2 and the empty thing. Let's check it, and yes, good. Okay, then I've defined a PBW ordering. Again, I don't see the need to repeat it. Really this should be separate. You know, I should be separating it into two separate boxes. So this is the PBW ordering, and this is just my general rule for how to simplify an expression that contains U's. So I don't know how much people are interested in the syntax of Mathematica. In fact, I think people should be interested, because first of all, you know, if we want to improve, you know, if we want to do the next case, which is what I want this class to do, you need to know how Mathematica works. And the other reason is, you know, in some sense, learning how to program things is much more valuable. It will stay with you much longer than learning a little bit of knot theory. So it's well worth understanding like this line of code. Should I? There's not much in it, but should I say what it does or?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, let's just check what collect does. So okay, maybe I should say that there is a whole lot of operators that simplify mathematical expressions, as you could expect. Okay? Maybe I'll start with some mathematical expression. I don't know what. Let's declare that z is equal to a plus b plus, sorry, plus c to the power, oops, no, sorry, to the power 5. Okay? So then there are lots of things I can do to it. I can take z and expand it, and well, you get the usual, what you would expect. I can take z and simplify it. Well, it's already in the simplest possible form, so that's not terribly interesting, but it would be more interesting if I will take, if I'll copy-paste this and feed it into simplify, and it found what it is. So simplify is sometimes will give you the expanded form and sometimes the factored form, depending on which one is simpler. It basically counts the size of the expression. But you know, if I wanted to force it to factor, I could take this thing and feed it into factor, and well, it will factor it. And then there are a lot of others. But let me just tell you about collect. So collect z with respect to the variable c will write will write z as a polynomial in c with coefficients anything else. So in our case, the polynomial is, well, the constant term is from here to here. The coefficient of c is from here to here. The coefficient of c squared is here. This is the coefficient of c cubed. Then this is the c to the fourth. Well, you can see it, okay? But then I can make it even more detailed or whatever. I could say collect with respect to the variable c, but then simplify the coefficients. And so now it will be, well, what you expect. Okay? So I'm defining that simplifying an expression is to apply collect to it, collect all things that look like a u. So underscore u means a pattern that fits the that fits u, that has a head u, and then expand. So basically, you know, if you have a big word in the universal enveloping algebra, it will write it as u of 1, 2, 3, not 1, 2, 3, I mean E, L, F, and then u of, or not a big word, a big linear combination. And here, u of e, comma e, comma f, so f e squared f. And then for each one, it will write its a coefficient here, and that coefficient will be expanded. Just will be written as a polynomial in the h's. I just found that this is a convenient way to view things. Okay? But part of the reason why I define a function to do it is because I want to be able to modify it. So if you don't like what you see, I can change it and then expressions will look differently. Okay? So let's enter it. And now comes the interesting part. Wait, did I enter the... what have I done here? Sorry, I skipped a line? No, okay. I don't know. No, everything is fine. Okay. So now I'm defining the product in U. Okay, in the universal enveloping algebra. This is the non-interesting part of the definition. First of all, I'm using a built-in symbol, which is star star, which is non-commutative multiply, and you can check what non-commutative multiply does. So question mark non-commutative multiply, and you find that it doesn't do anything. So it's just a symbol, but it doesn't really do anything. So therefore I can use it to do with it whatever I want. So, however, it is still protected. So if I'll just try to define 1 times 3 is equal to 7, it will tell me that it's a protected tag. The non-commutative multiply is protected, so I cannot do this. Okay? So first thing, I unprotect it. And again, usually you should handle such things with care because you might be contradicting existing definitions. But non-commutative multiply has essentially no existing definition, so it doesn't really matter. Okay? But anyway.
Or you can just use a different notation.
I could have used a different notation, but since I like this one, I equally well, instead of star star, I could have used invented something, okay? But I like this one, okay? So anyway, so now I'm defining, I'm making a few dull definitions. So if you non-commutative multiply a single argument, it just returns it. Zero non-commutative multiply anything is equal to anything non-commutative multiply zero is equal to zero. Doing non-commutative multiply with an empty u, meaning with the identity, returns the same thing. And, well, basically, and then there is linearity with respect to multiplication by scalars and with respect to addition. I don't know if I should go through what these do, okay? But they don't do much. Basically, if you... Should I go through it, or is it sufficiently... I don't know how much mathematical people know, so...
Which lines are you talking about? The first sort of block?
The last two.
The last two, I mean, I don't know any Mathematica, but the other ones are sort of clear, but yeah. The last two are...
Okay. So maybe I should explain what this notation means. Okay?
Yeah.
This notation means a pure function. So what's a pure function? It's a function that is not given a name, okay, but is defined once and used once, okay, or maybe used within a limited context, but I don't give it a name, okay? So, or in fact, I could give it a name, but how should I, you know what, maybe for mathematicians, it's the function itself. It's the object which is the function. So, you know, maybe I'll do examples. So, okay. So let's define Q, or no, let's keep it as a pure function. So sharp to the power 2 ampersand, so the ampersand means the thing before it is a pure function. If you're not sure how far before you can go, so if it appears in a long expression and you're not sure what's the order of precedence, always safe to put parentheses. But anyway, this is a pure function. The argument is sharp, and what the function does is, well, it takes sharps and squares it. Okay? So if you take this pure function and evaluate it on 7, what would you get, Stefan?
49?
Indeed.
So it's like a lambda or something?
It's like lambda calculus. In fact, an alternative notation for it, I could have written x escape fn escape maps to x squared, and I think then, I'm not sure if now I need the ampersand or not, because I hardly ever used it. Let's check. Oh, you, no, I don't, okay? So that's an alternative notation. I think it's even more, a bit more readable, but I only learned it recently. So I don't use it very often. So in fact, why don't we use it? So let's declare that lambda is linear, okay? Just not bilinear, just linear, okay? So how would I do it? I would say lambda of, well, I guess there are several ways to do it. I could do lambda of A plus B, so a pattern called A, plus another pattern named B, is just defined to be lambda of A plus lambda of B. Okay? So I've entered this definition. Now let's check it. What's lambda of X plus Y? Okay? Here's a different way to do the same thing. So I could say lambda of Z, but Z is something whose head is a plus, so basically a sum of things, okay, is declared to be, so what I want to do is I want to apply lambda to each term within Z, okay? Oh, I should have told you how to apply something to each term. Okay, so maybe I'll do it up above. So apply a function f to every element in a list. So here is the list 1, 2, 3, 4, and I'm applying f to each element. So giving me this. Okay? So, by the way, all of these are really operations on trees, right? So, what had happened here was the following. So, 1, 2, 3, 4 is internally an expression that looks like list, and it has four whose head is list, and it has four children, and they are 1, 2, 3, and 4. Okay. This symbol translates to the word map. So really, there is the bigger expression here is map, and map has two children. The right children is list 1, 2, 3, 4, and the left children, the left child is S. Okay? And then there is Mathematica has some evaluation rules which say whenever you see a map left hand side, right hand side, what you do is you take the left hand side and put it in between as an intermediate within each branch of the right hand side. So this will become list of F of 1, F of 2, F of 3, and F of 4, okay? Which is what you see there, okay? So really much of Mathematica, or a lot of Mathematica, are built-in rules how to manipulate trees, how to do various things to trees. So here's one of them. If I had defined already that F of 1, that F is a function that does something to its argument, then this would get evaluated further, and F of 1 would be replaced by whatever F of 1 is. Okay, in our case, F was not defined yet, so it just stays this way. Okay? So, in fact, if instead of F, I had used a pure function, so instead of F, I could have put here a pure function, so X goes to x to the power 3, okay? And then structurally, instead of f, I have here the pure function x goes to x cubed, which itself is a bigger tree, but I'm not bothering to write what it is as a tree. Then it would put this pure function here, 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 and pure function, when fed with an argument, has an evaluation rule, which you get an output. So instead of getting, you can guess what you will get. I mean, 1, 8, 27, and the last one is too big for me to think. Okay? So anyway, so now I can declare an evaluation rule. And the evaluation rule is if you see a lambda whose argument is, oh, but you know, lambda I've already defined, so it will still work, but you will not know which definition worked. Okay, so let me now define that mu is linear. So if you see mu, whose argument is a plus, basically all I want to do is to put the mu's under the plus. So basically if you see plus and then a bunch of things, I want to replace it by plus of mu of all of these things. So basically all I have to do is to do mu applied to, or mapped, sorry, not applied, mapped on z. So that's an alternative way to define linearity. If you don't believe me, let's check it. So what's mu of x plus y should be mu of x plus mu of y. So in principle, these two are the same. In practice, this one is often much more efficient. So I got used to writing this one, even though it's a little bit more cryptic. I mean, that one is intuitively completely clear. This one is a bit more cryptic, but it's much more efficient. And the reason is that if you have a sum of 1,000 things, and you know, in the things that I do, in my business, you always meet sums of 1,000 things, okay? So the rule for lambda would split it into 1 and 999 apply linearities. And on the second term, we'll split it as 1, 998 and apply linearity and so on. And that might take, a microsecond, but I mean, it could get bigger, okay? And whereas this does it simultaneously. So, okay, so now that I've explained how to define linearity, really what I'm doing here is, if x is the head of the left-hand side of a non-commutative multiplication is a plus, then I take the pure function which non-commutative multiplies with y and apply it to all elements of x. And then likewise, if y is a plus. So now I've defined bilinearity, not linearity. Okay? So I can execute this, and now you can check it. So, I mean, x plus y non-commutative multiplies z. Because I don't know, by now we have conflicting definitions. So z is, let's do z1. It's still complaining. Maybe it's complaining because it was really expecting to see things with u in them. I don't remember exactly where in here I've made it think that it would see things with u in them, but anyway, that's sorry. I could simply put a u inside everywhere. So u of x plus u of y times u of z. Why is it? Maybe x and y were also given values already? No. I don't know.
Clear the code.
I don't remember which definition conflicted with, by now it's too many things. It's not important. It's not, we can ignore it. Can we? I think I prefer to quit and reevaluate all the things that are highlighted, just so that just to be sure that we're not conflicting. The next line is the most interesting line in the whole code. This is the key point. This. And last time it was three lines, and I thought about it again and shrunk it to one line. So, basically, that's the definition of the universal enveloping algebra. Okay, so, my rule will be that u will always store a list of generators which are already in canonical order. Okay? So u, if ever I will create a u, it will already be in the basis. So it will always have the e's before the l's before the f's. And had it been a bigger algebra, then it's whatever it is, it's always in order. So U always has things in increasing order in it. But now I need to tell you how to multiply two U's. Okay? So the rule is very simple. You split the left U. Okay, first of all, how to multiply linear combinations, I already told you, right? It applies this linearity. So the only thing that remains is to multiply two basis things, okay? So you split the left u into x's, xx, which stands for lots of x's, and a single x, which is the rightmost thing. You split the right argument into a y and then lots of further y's, where the lots of can be the empty set, but some arbitrary number of further y's. Okay? And then, if x is before y in our ordering, then the whole word is in order as it is. So I just produce the word xxxyyy. Okay? And otherwise, okay, so this is it. So if x is less than y, then I output xxxyyy. Okay? And otherwise, so notice the parenthetization here. So first of all, I reverse the order of y and x, and to this I add the bracket of x and y, which I've already defined. And then I multiply it on the left with the x's and on the y with the y's, and that will continue the sorting procedure. So that's it. That is the definition of the universal enveloping algebra. So I don't know, if you don't believe me...
Is there some sort of recursion somewhere?
The recursion is... Well, yes, I mean, non-commutative multiply is defined in terms of itself.
Ah.
Okay? So, but... again, what happens is that I swap these two, and there might be a cost to pay.
Hmm.
And the cost is the bracket, so that's the other term here. But once I swap them, I continue with the non-commutative multiply, and non-commutative multiply will continue simplifying this. So I don't know, if you don't believe me, let's check it. So let's multiply E1 L1 F1 in fact with itself. Let's square this thing. Let's square an elf. Okay? So I copy paste it and see what comes out. I don't know. So, okay. The last term came because of the basically reordering. So EELLFF. But then in various places I had to cross things against other things, and these are the intermediate terms I got. So whether it's okay, I don't know if this is right or wrong at the moment. But that's why later I will run some checks. Okay? Okay, next, I'm still in the definitions, okay? But next, so here, testing is like a minute away. Okay? So next is the following. So in practice, okay, so U contains words that are already in canonical order. But sometimes I want to enter a word which isn't in canonical order. So that's what UU does. So UU means unordered U, okay? And UU, when you input a long word into it, it will automatically convert it to the U form. So it will order it, in other words. So, you know, maybe I'll test it before explaining how it works. So basically, UU of, so let me take the exact same word from here. So let's take an elf and then another elf. So this is an unordered word. And when I compute it, it comes out the same combination of U's as before. Okay. So first of all, I had a provision. So in fact, I wanted you to also understand powers. So instead of writing, instead of repeating a letter 7 times, I wanted it to understand powers. So I declared that if UU sees a list of something on the left, no matter how many things, and then some x to a power n, and then something on the right, it just replaces it by UU of left, right, and in between this table of n times x converted into a sequence. Maybe this is too much of syntax to go into, but at least the principle should be clear. So actually, let's test it. So, you know, what if I will take this and replace this e by e to the power 4? Okay? So now it's a much No, it's not much longer. I was expecting it to be a gigantic expression. It isn't, but basically the thing to notice is that instead of two E's here, we have 5 in the kind of reordered version. And then the coefficients also differ. Anyway, how does UU work? So the most interesting thing is UU of left and then whatever R can be many things is you just multiply U of left with UU of R. That's all. So that's it's almost empty. Anyway, now there is a testing. And okay, so for testing, I wanted to first of all produce a basis. Actually produce the basis. And I think I don't want to go through the definition of this, just the definitions of here, simply because I want to move forward. But the basic point is that U products will give all the products that can be written in U with a certain alphabet and to a certain power. So if I'll try to compute U, sorry, I typed in the wrong place. So, okay, first of all, I should execute this, and now, U products, and my list of arguments will be E1, L1, and F1, and I look at it to degree 4, then the result are all the words you can write in which the E's appear before the L's before the F's, and the powers are, the total power is 4. So 4 E's, 3 E's and an F, 3 E's and an L, and so on. That just generates a basis. So now I can do tests. So, okay. Okay, this test some of the tests I already did. So this I did, this one is the one I just told you how to do. But here is an interesting test. So I define BAS, stands for basis, to be all the products of ELFs on two strands, sorry, I on two strands 1 and 2, and up to degree 3. So in fact, let's see what U products. So this is not interesting. This is just the thing that generates the basis. So here it is. So basically, all words up to degree 3 on two strands, so you have E1 and F1, and on the alphabet, ELF. Okay? So this is the basis. And now, I create a table for X running on the basis, for Y running on the basis, and for each X and Y, I compute the bracket of X and Y plus the bracket of Y and X. So basically, I'm checking that the bracket is anti-symmetric. Of course, it is, but I'm just doing a sanity check. So let me remove the last bit of it, and this takes a little bit of time because this is a relatively large number of things. You get a long list of zeros. I don't like seeing long lists of zeros. So in fact, this long list of zeros is a matrix, right? Because, right, it's for each x you have all the y's. So it's a list of zeros. But I don't like inspecting such long lists. So I will first of all flatten it. And now, well, it still takes a long time. And now it's just a single long list of zeros. That's still not informative. So now I'll apply union to this list. Union is just a mathematical union command which drops repetitions. And if I will get anything but a single zero at the end, then I have a bug in the program. Okay. Now, likewise, I'm checking Jacobi. Maybe I'll skip that because it's actually not the interesting thing. But the more interesting thing is this one. So I take all available products, and with the variable xyz running on all subsets of the bases which are of size 3, so basically so xyz is a subset of size 3, and I just I assign it into x, y, and z. So now x, y, and z run over all subsets of size 3 of the basis, and for each subset of size 3, I check whether x times y times z is equal to x times y times z. So this is the most crucial thing, right? The biggest property that universal enveloping algebra has is that it's associative. So I'm checking it, and it worked. Okay. I still have 2-3 minutes, so now I can actually do. The framework works. I can do computations in a universal enveloping algebra. Let's do some computations. So I'm defining lowercase rij to be h tensor L plus f tensor E. Okay? Which is what I advertised it would be. It should be on your first page. What happened there? Why did it? Something beeped.
I think it's fine.
Okay. So this is Rij. If you don't believe me, let's compute R sub 1, 2. Here it is. Okay? And now I'm checking the classical Young-Baxter equation. The classical Young-Baxter equation is the sum of these commutators. But I'm computing first each of them individually, just so that you would believe me that I'm not writing a program that outputs zero. So this is zero, this is non-zero, this one is the negative of the previous one, so the sum of the three is zero. This is actually a proof of classical Young-Baxter. It's not just of course you could have done it by hand, but it's a proof, okay? So next, Young-Baxter. So Young-Baxter, so I'm defining a new function, the exponential in U. So the exponential 2 degree n of an element lowercase u is, well, first of all, I have a local variable t. I set t to be 1, essentially. And then I take t and add to it the sum as k goes from 1 to n of, take t, multiply it by u, assign it to t, and divide by k factorial. So basically, each time you multiply it by another factor of u and divide by k factorial. Multiply by another factor of u and divide by k factorial. So this is the usual formula for summation. Okay? For exponentiation. So let's enter it. And if you don't believe me, here is the exponential of E1 to degree 5. So the exponential of E1 to degree 5 is just what you would expect, right? So the last term is 5 E1s with factor 1 over 20. 1 over 120. And I've also defined here the uppercase R, the Young-Baxter element, uppercase Rij, to be the exponential of lowercase Rij to degree n. So, for example, Rij to the 4, first of all, it's a mess. You don't see just 120 or 124. You do see 124, but you also see other things, because this is now, because some commutation relations had to be applied, okay? Also, you see this fact that sort of the coefficients of words in the universal enveloping algebra were collected in front of them. So that's the simp routine. And finally, this is the answer. If it's good or not, I don't know. But then the last thing I do is, so with n equals to 2, so only to degree 2, I'm simplifying, well, the left-hand side of the Young-Baxter equation minus the right-hand side of the Young-Baxter equation, and I'm printing the answer in short form. So it's not zero, because it's only supposed to be zero to degree 2. So the thing you have to look is, you have to look at is to check that all the terms that appear here are of degree greater than 2. And at least the beginning looks good, and all the other terms were suppressed. This is what the short means, suppressed terms. I didn't want it to print too much. Okay? Maybe I will not do it, but I also wrote a little program that crops things above a certain degree. So this is what 2-degree does. It crops things beyond a certain degree. So once you enter it, if I'll now run it, sorry, let's keep the previous one. It was, so this is the same thing as before, but cropped at degree n, and the result is 0. Okay? So we're out of time. If we had more time, I would have told you that I'm already ready to compute invariants. And in fact, you know, a few more lines of codes, and we would compute the trefoil. And it would be horribly inefficient, but that's fair. I mean, we're just at the beginning. Okay, so let's stop.